Greetings, everyone. You're with Norm Schultz, Chalmer Wren, and I'm Nick Urkus. This is the Mile High Sanity Project, and you're in it.
Well, good morning.
Hello.
We are back from a long break.
It's been a hiatus.
Was, I think, needed for everybody.
Yeah.
I was struggling with my career, a few other things, but I'm glad to be back.
Likewise.
Yeah. And Nick, you have some stuff going on yourself as well.
That's true. I was struggling to make a person.
Yeah.
And I'm working on that now. So my wife is pregnant. So.
Yeah. Well, I think your work is done, from my understanding.
I had, you know, such minimal involvement. I almost feel like I should have no say in anything. So.
I'm sure many fathers have felt that way.
Basically, I was like, that's all I got to do?
Yeah. Man,
nature really is so sexist because it's so good for me.
I am still all alone.
You are. Yes. Well.
I mean, except for the voices.
But. Occasionally alone.
Occasionally alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, with you soon to become a father, you are going to be, as a family, very intimately involved in the subject of today's podcast.
It's one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to
yeah.
it.
So today's yeah. podcast is on education in the United States.
Yeah.
Public education, I think,
and
maybe.
Chalmer, I told Norm earlier that, like, you know, I looked around at the state of affairs in the world and I was like, this is fine. Let's just bring a child into this.
Things are going awesome.
So
let's make more.
Yeah, it's going real well.
Yeah.
I'm interested to talk about it because for high school, I went to private school.
And I went to public school.
I went to public school, but my public school sucked.
Yeah, I liked my public school. I mean, I felt like I got a pretty decent education out of it. I didn't feel like I was lacking whenever I went to higher education from it.
This is great, then. We had three very different experiences.
Yeah.
My high school, well, you know, we moved from a pretty good area in Connecticut to Texas, and not a great area of Texas, Fort Worth. At the time, Fort Worth was, I think it was the murder capital of the United States, yeah. something like that in the 80s.
And then Washington, D.C. said, hold my beer.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually didn't get that. Did you get that?
For a while, Washington, D.C., I think, was the murder capital of the U.S.
Oh.
Pretty sure.
Oh. Okay.
I could just be making up stuff that's not true.
I think that was later. This was like 1980 when we moved.
You guys were the murder capital before it was cool.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we were.
I don't know any of these things.
Though I'll tell you, I kind of feel like what you mean we? Because I never felt really at home in Texas. I mean, you know.
But you moved to a state where one of the founding fathers was Moses. I mean, you got a special education.
Texas is obviously a very large state and very diverse. And there's everything in the world you could say about any place you could say about Texas. So there's good and bad. And at the time, Fort Worth was not particularly good.
Yeah.
And the public school system, I think, was struggling. There was a fair amount of poverty, which that causes, you know, public schools to not do well. They get a double whammy. They get underfunded. And they get students who are underprepared and harder to teach. So it's kind of an inverse relationship. And on top of that, Texas schools emphasize football a lot. And so that interrupts instruction and makes – if you're not on the football team and not involved in that and don't really care for that, you're kind of an outsider. So, I was also in an outsider religion at the time, right. As you guys know. So I was a double outsider. So, that wasn't super fun for me. And I don't think that the school that I went to performed very well in general.
Huh.
That was the experience I had in high school. Pretty disillusioned.
Did your parents ever object to anything that was being taught in the curriculum at the public schools?
Sure. Yeah. Evolution.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jehovah's Witnesses are creationists. Hardcore.
Like, did they write the school board and stuff like that?
No.
Are they young earth creationists?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah. No, their strategy is you're so involved in your church that school is just a nuisance. Mm. So you got to do it. Maybe you can get some things out of it. We want you to do well, but we don't want to take you to take these things too seriously.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And as far as, you know, doing well in school, I don't think that Jehovah's Witnesses emphasize that much. There's no, at least when I was in it, there were no, like, church-related programs for helping kids with homework or study or anything. It was always about Jehovah's Witness literature. There were plenty of those.
That kind of makes sense to me, given the religion. I mean, you say, like, they're always just waiting for, like, the end of the world is next Tuesday, always. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, why bother learning so much earthly stuff?
Yeah, I think they have a very strained relationship with education in general. You know, they want their members to be educated, but they want them to be educated in their material. Some of their material is fairly sophisticated, actually. Some of the material that they write is pretty difficult reads, and they spend a lot of time reading, you know, learning new words. They kind of pride themselves on that. They pride themselves on the quality of their arguments against other religions.
Yeah.
And so it's a weird kind of relationship to kind of academic concerns.
Because they teach you how to really argue.
Oh, yeah.
For your standpoint.
Or your,
Yeah.
When you go to the door, you are prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my school, and I started in Ohio, Northeast Ohio, since I grew up about an hour from Cleveland. So did kindergarten through ninth grade in Ohio. And then when I moved out here to Colorado, I picked up 10 to 12 then.
Cool.
At that point, it was fairly consistent throughout there. Seemed like the biggest difference was some of the social studies classes were different.
What part of Colorado did you go to high school in?
Parker, Colorado.
Parker.
So, yeah, okay. About a half hour from Denver. Or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the schools there are pretty good, known to be pretty good.
At the time, they were. I mean, yeah. I've definitely for sure. I don't know if they've declined or not in the meantime. But, at the time, I think it was one of the higher performing districts.
Yeah. I don't know if it's true, but it seems to me that kind of some of the districts in the south of Denver are better districts. I know Englewood is a small school district, and it has a reputation for being a good school district, especially for teachers to work in. Cherry Creek School District has the number one high school in the state.
Yeah, I've heard it now. Like when I was younger, I went to Douglas County Schools, and those were more on the up at that time. But I heard they've taken a bit of a decline, and now Cherry Creek seems to have come out on top.
I would have gone to Smoky Hill
if
I had not gone to private school.
If you had not gone to private school.
My private school was in Englewood.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though, is that when we talk about whether schools are good or bad, I'm kind of at a point where we don't know whether schools are good or bad, because the way the reputation of schools, the way that is measured, I now don't think I buy.
Well, how is the quality of public school measured?
So there are a lot of different metrics. At Denver Public Schools, we have what's called the SPF, school performance factors, something like that. Yeah, I know. the thing is that when they have us in meetings, they basically tell us that how this is calculated is very complicated. So they really haven't told us how it's calculated. They just tell us a variety of things. So
SPF sounds like a metric of how white your school is.
Well, DPS is not that white, actually.
You have the children stand in the sun and see how long it takes them to burn, and then that's their score.
I got it. But as far as in general, the way schools are, their performance is measured is things like test scores, graduation rates, numbers of students entering college. But now that is changing to metrics that are under an umbrella called college and career readiness. And that has to do with different test scores. And the possibility of students creating a portfolio demonstrating what kind of work they're able to do. I think the principles of these things are good, but it's just completely fraught with potential problems.
Right. I mean, you know, I've always wondered how it seems clear to me that you have to have some kind of a mechanism as a society to evaluate the quality of your schools
and
the quality of the education you're giving. But I mean, over the years,
I don't know how you do it.
Right.
Though.
That's over the years, I've kept that's trying to think of like, problem. How do you do it? And because I know some people don't like the standardized testing, and some people want it to be more specific for their area of the country, which I don't understand as much. I mean, I can't ever decide. Like, I feel like the cranky philosopher in me just wants to say, well, at some point, knowledge and truth,
right?
You should be studying the same knowledge and truths. So like, if you're studying facts about anything, they should be true anywhere.
Right.
And so I kind of like the idea of designing a curriculum in an educational system that ensures that, I don't know, But then I don't know how to phrase it. It's like the
sure.
I want people to have the same quality and access to knowledge, I guess. I don't know. And also, like, it matters, I suppose, like, what do you emphasize? This is such a wide array of stuff to teach.
Right.
Well, career readiness is kind of an interesting term, too, because it kind of depends on your area.
Sure. Like
the kind of career that you might have, or that could really vary wildly.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess maybe we should back up. Like, what do you feel like...
What is the purpose of public education?
The purpose of education is in general.
Yeah.
Like, what are we trying to do?
Isn't it funny that conversations take the philosophical route rapidly if you do them right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, we really can't get very far unless we know what the fuck we're talking about.
We need to know, like, what its purpose is and why it's important.
Yeah.
Or if it's important.
Well, the common argument out there for public education, I think, takes a couple of different prongs. One purpose is to prepare people to be good citizens of a democracy. So in order to vote, you need to be able to understand the issues of the day. You need to be able to read news, think about it, think critically. You need to be able to decide what's good, not just for yourself, but for others. You need to be able to navigate sometimes kind of complex problems like... Mm-hmm. How do you vote on climate change regulation if you have no idea what climate change is? And even more importantly, how do you vote on that in the face of there being material out there that tells you that it's not real?
Mm-hmm. So the
how
goal
do you
is,
think through that?
The goal is kind of to create a member of society
who yes.
can participate in a functional way.
Yes, and yeah. I tell this to my students that I say... you know, okay, you don't like school and you don't want to be here. Cool. Well, school is part of being in this society. So if you don't want to be in a society, you're welcome to live completely alone on the planet somewhere.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then you won't have to go to school.
Yeah,
and they kid with me like, yeah, I'd love to do that. And like, okay, have you really thought about that? How are you going to, like, survive?
Yeah.
Tell them to watch Castaway and get back to you.
Sure.
Or go to a society that doesn't have education as part of its... Or a formal education system.
Which you'd be hard-pressed to find a society that does that.
Because even if they don't have education in the sense that we do here, there's still some kind of...
there's a structure for teaching you how to behave as a person and interact with other people.
Well, the vast majority of countries have a public education system.
But I mean, like, you know, part of education, like when you say, like, becoming a productive member of society and being able to live in society... You're also learning how to interact with other people,
mm-hmm.
Interact with people who are in authority positions, where you have to do jobs,
mm-hmm.
where you have to interact with your peers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is a way where you can kind of start teaching people, I don't know, kind of like the greater complexities of life. Like, you're going to have to interact with other people. You're going to have to be able to navigate their beliefs, their feelings on things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Social skills.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. Like, there's a lot more to it and a wide variety of what it does.
Yeah. Yeah. Social skills. Collaboration. That's actually one of the things that I measure for students is their ability to collaborate. So I give them assignments that require them to work with others. And if it's a team effort. If their team succeeds, then they get a good collaboration grade. If their team fails, it doesn't matter if one person could do it. If the team failed, then they don't. And they have to try it over again.
Yeah.
And this has become part... of what is called in our biz 21st century skills. That is there's all these buzzwords in education. Some of them are pretty good and some of them are awful.
Trademark.
That one's decent. 21st century skill is collaboration. I think that hints at one of the purposes of education is to make someone socially able to work with others, because most of the time they're going to have to do that. I mean, they're going to have to do that no matter what kind of job they have, by interacting with people outside of their home or interacting with people in the line to vote or, you know, look, though, in a way we're kind of becoming a society where you have to interact with people less and less as far as face to face. You know, you can do click list to get your groceries and order everything you need on Amazon and work from home. And, you know, there's a lot of things that are changing about that.
Yeah.
But you could respond by just saying you're still social. It's just through a medium.
It's funny. Like, now that I'm talking this out loud, it seems like my favorite part of school, looking back, which is the knowledge, because I'm a nerd, mm-hmm. almost seems to be.
It's not really.
The seems purpose. like not only not the focus, but almost like the least important part of it.
Yes, that's true, but that is the way that things are moving, because you're going to pick up knowledge with the skills, but it's very easy to not pick up the skills if you're focusing on the knowledge.
Yeah.
Right. So people can learn knowledge if they're kind of, for whatever reason at that time in their life, a smart person. And we're going to set aside whether people are naturally smart or not. That's controversial, whether it actually is true. I think it is true, but not definitive.
Well,
there are ways to overcome whether you're naturally smart to become more intelligent. And there are ways that you can screw yourself up to where if you're naturally smart, you can become dumb.
In a way, it seems like the school, like the purpose is almost to teach people how to drive, but it's not about teaching them to drive to interesting places so much as like they just need to have the skills to know how to drive.
Yeah.
And then
teach a man to fish instead of giving them the fish. Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
So, that's two things, social skills and being a good citizen. Being prepared for a career. So economies don't work well if people aren't entering the workforce, and the economies that work, there's some controversy about what kind of workforce makes for a good economy. Is it a workforce that has a balance between manufacturing and labor, blue collar kinds of jobs, and higher level, high skilled jobs? Or is it, the more higher skilled the workforce is, the better the economy? That's controversial. I don't know that I know a conclusive answer. I think that I would be skeptical of hearing a conclusive answer on that.
It seems like both are valuable because, I mean, you also want to be able to produce people who have the ability to have innovative thoughts and ideas and create new technologies and new methodologies for things.
Yes. But what's interesting is that even the blue, quote unquote, blue collar jobs are becoming more technical and difficult and cognitive, because that's right. I mean, if you're in a, if you can think about the way capitalism works, if you can have a machine do a repetitive job, that machine, obviously doesn't have to take breaks or go on vacation or call in sick. Well, I guess it, calls in sick every once in a while. It breaks down. But it's not, it's going to be more efficient.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be why the machine would be there. So then you transfer that job to the people who operate the machine, and people who fix the machine, and people who design the machine, and so on and so on and so on. So even the, blue collar jobs are becoming more difficult to do. They now require people to interact with complex technology and take trainings, and then they got to be a student again. So we tell our students this, and I think it's true that, you're pretty much, in a modern society, always going to be in school in some form or another. I mean, I'm taking classes. I bet you take classes regularly or do professional development regularly.
Professional development, yeah.
Yeah, I bet you do too.
Go to trainings and all kinds of stuff.
I love learning new things.
Yeah.
Lately, I've been YouTubing college-level creative writing classes.
Neat.
And I've listened to hours worth of it.
I'm taking art classes. I just started. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, I would say, I think back to college, I probably only use maybe 10% of anything that I learned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any textbook knowledge that I learned.
Totally.
Whenever I go onto a new project or something at work, I immediately have to train for it.
Yep. Learn how to do it.
I don't walk into anything with advanced knowledge in it.
Yep.
Let's just cut to the chase and not sugarcoat it. We're just killing time until robots take over and enslave us and plug us into the matrix.
So maybe a better concept of education would be teaching people how to learn.
Yeah.
How to learn. Yeah.
How to adapt. How to. Because you don't just go to school, you're done with school, and now you have all the skills that you need.
Yeah.
The only skill you really have to have is to be able to assess new problems and adapt.
Oh, good. Well, this means I can bring knowledge back into this because.
Yeah.
I mean, think of the importance of something like the Renaissance era, or like that kind of enlightenment, where learning how to think and think critically and reason is immensely useful in life.
Yes.
Almost everything that we've been talking about, that kind of skill helps you do everything better.
Right.
That sort of thing, I think, is an important thing to make sure we teach.
Absolutely. I mean, there are some basic skills that we haven't mentioned. I mean, reading, how to write.
Yeah.
And how to write doesn't mean necessarily how to write by hand. That's kind of going away. Cursive is kind of going away. And some people bemoan that. I think that's kind of stupid because it's just a method of writing.
For your class, what difference does it make? Learning how to raise your hand and wait to be called on.
Social skills, yes, absolutely. But, you know, basic reading and writing, there's no question that, you know, the better, the higher level that you can read at, the more you are prepared to learn anything.
Well, to use information, you have to have access to it in some way. And
well, it's also just the ability to have good, well, that having good habits of study. So, you know, for example, when I look at something new, I'm automatically thinking of the vocabulary in it, how well I know it. If I don't, and it's really important, recognizing that it's important, looking it up, understanding the word, then going back. That just that one practice is something that you have to have some kind of some background in how to learn in order to think that way.
You know, I just realized that your life has funny parallels to 2001: A Space Odyssey now, to where at the beginning of the school year, you're like watching the apes just hit each other with sticks. And then slowly throughout the semester, you start hearing as you're teaching the kids.
Sure. Well, I don't know if I ever hear. Actually, I think I hear it every once in a while, and then it goes back. And then they're, you know, picking up the bones again. So, yeah.
And Norm goes, my God, it's full of stars.
Shit. So, okay, we've got citizenship, social skills, career readiness, how to learn. I think there's another part of public education that I think is not given enough credit, is that part of the reason is we want to have people, young adults, enter adulthood with the tools to have a fulfilling life.
Absolutely.
I tell my students this about science, that, you know, I know that very few of them will get into any scientific careers. And maybe you won't even like science classes in college. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. But learning something about how the world works makes it more interesting to look at, makes it more beautiful to look at. You don't know the connections that it can make in your mind and how it can, you know, your ideas, even creative ideas for music or art or dance or anything, can stem from that.
Studying the universe is awe-inspiring for me, especially as an atheist now. I mean, like the closest I get to feeling the kind of feelings I used to feel back when I was a believer, when I was a kid, is studying and learning new knowledge and new information. Mm-hmm. I find it transcendent sometimes whenever I'm, you know, looking at a picture of the Hubble Deep Field and the fact that I know what that means when I look at it now because of what I've learned about what those lights are in that picture.
Yeah.
I find it mind blowing, and I find that sort of thing, I mean, it's been valuable to me. I mean, I don't work in a career where I'm a scientist, but I always, right. I do just, I've gotten to a point where I kind of value knowledge just for the sake of knowledge. I just really enjoy it. It improves in, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just improves everything whenever I get more.
Now, did you have that love of learning in high school?
Yeah.
You did.
I've always enjoyed.
I did not. Didn't either? Yeah. Huh.
Well, at the time, I don't know if it was like necessarily a love of learning, but I was always good at it, certain things. And there are certain things I found interesting. In high school, my favorite class was always science, and my second favorite was history.
I
was better at history than science, though, because my mind, I'm really good at remembering things. So
right.
I don't have a photographic memory or anything, but if I hear a song once or twice, I know all the words.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with movies and stuff. So when it just came to history, I can just memorize all those facts that I find interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And science is a little bit harder for me,
right?
Because there's more applying the knowledge that you've learned in it.
It's not just memorizing, it's understanding causal connections that can get complicated.
Yeah, so the complicated part of it gave me a little trouble, but when it came to just understanding the basic theory of it, I understand how a car works, but I can't build one. I mean, it's that sort of thing.
I don't know. It sounds to me like you did develop a love of learning in high school.
Yeah.
So that's great. And I've been teaching in tough schools because that's how your careers go in the United States. And actually, that would be getting into a new topic, which is there something wrong with our education system? And if so, what is it? So I think I'm going to sidebar that comment and first say, I think we actually have a decent idea here of what is the purpose of education.
Yeah.
I have down here in parentheses, a joy of learning. That would be, you know, something that you want to instill in students and try to guide them towards. And then when they get their diploma and enter the world, if they have that joy of learning and they have some skills and how to do it, they have good social skills, they know how to learn, and they've been given some tools to have a fulfilling life already, I think then they can go far with that.
Well, I mean, I consider myself an amateur philosopher, so I mean, it's a love of wisdom, so I guess that makes sense. Yeah. But
so, yeah, this should be how we're judging schools. What I think is interesting, I sent you guys a few articles. The article I sent you about the real way to look at U.S. performance in our schools, the gist of that article was that, you know, it's common knowledge. Everybody knows that the school system in general in the United States, that we are not performing well, that we are ranked low compared to other developed nations, and that we should be ashamed of ourselves, and that this is a crisis of education. And this article is saying this is actually not true.
Well, and it goes back to how do you measure that?
Well, yes. So there's that problem. But even by the current ways that are that we're measuring, that story isn't true. Because the numeric difference between... Because when you hear that, you're thinking about our ranking. So schools in the United States average all out rank somewhere in the 30s as far as compared to other developed countries. And so we think that since, you know, we're the United States, we should be ranked number one, number two, somewhere up there. The problem is that the differences between the rankings, the difference between what ranked one, two, three, etc., the statistical differences between those are trivial.
Yeah.
They're technically ranked, so technically we are ranked where people think. But they're not. That's not an accurate picture of how well you're doing. I mean, it's not a competition. If you're, you know, 1% less than the country that is at number one, then
it's almost like you see some of those graphs where people like are like there's, you know, like 10 people tied at number one or something like that. And
then so you get into the further decimal points to differentiate them in a ranking. Rankings can be deceptive. Basically, you know, all statistics can be deceptive. You have to really think about these things. So the article looked at, factoring that out, how are we really doing? And it draws the conclusion that we're doing well. We're doing about what you would expect a country like the United States to do. A lot of the countries that are really high on the list are very kind of monochromatic, if you want to put it that way, in their culture. They're kind of monocultures. So, for example, Finland is widely regarded as the number one public education system of any country. Well, you know, Finnish people, for one thing, it's a small
nation. That, like, consider what we have to deal with in the United States. Like, a lot of the other countries in Europe are the size of our states.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so they have populations about that or less.
Yeah.
And so
I would be surprised. I don't have the statistics for the population of Finland. We could look it up real quick. But I would be shocked if it was more than the population of California. My guess is it's less than the population of California.
Oh, I bet it is.
Yeah. I mean,
I bet Japan is high on the list as well.
Yeah. Yes, I believe so.
I mean, I know that the entire population of New Zealand is about what Colorado is.
Yeah.
And the landmass, too, matches about, too.
Yeah, and Colorado is not that populated of a state. I mean,
no.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in, you know, in America, we have a unique problem of, since it's the United States, you have this, an interesting dichotomy between, you know, the federal and the state system.
Right.
And where it can vary from state to state.
And some tension.
And I think that also has, you know, like, other countries don't have to deal with that.
Right. They also don't have to deal with the diversity.
Maybe Canada, because they're big enough to have a lot of territories. Yes.
The other countries don't have to deal with the diversity or illegal immigration in the United States. So, I mean, I'm not saying anything for or against illegal immigration. But it simply is a fact that people come here that their family has not been educated significantly or in some cases at all, and they enter the school system based on their age. And obviously they're way behind and they don't speak the language. And it's very difficult to get highly skilled teachers that can actually teach them in Spanish. And so, I mean, but they have a right to the education system. So what do? I mean, you have to try to catch up, and they're going to perform poorly until they improve. That, by the way, there's a lot of myths regarding language and it being a barrier to education. So, for example, you tend to think that, you know, a person who is an illegal immigrant, that the best way, if you really were just looking at their interest, to teach them would be to teach them in their native language. And in some respects, that is the best way. But the expectation you have for their skill in that language doesn't match necessarily where they are at as well, because they might not have had a very diverse or sophisticated exposure to the world to develop a vocabulary that you're expecting. Mm-hmm. So when they're learning English and Spanish at the same time, sometimes the English can rapidly overtake their Spanish, where even though they're more comfortable in Spanish, they actually have a more sophisticated vocabulary in English. They just don't feel it's rare. It's very odd. It's a very odd situation. And there are a lot of other complexities too. So all that leads to what appears to be lower performance. But of course, judging a school's performance on how the students are doing without factoring in where the students come from and how they are performing academically when they enter the school is ridiculous. Yeah. That's not a legitimate way to look at a school system.
Yeah.
Now, in Finland, where you have very little immigration and you've got a culture that is very unified and, you know, families are highly supportive. There's very low poverty. There's just strong families in general. I mean, it's just not the same circumstance.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that they would perform better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, when you start to look at these kinds of things, the United States education system is just not doing as poorly as people think it is doing.
Right. That makes sense.
Even if you're and that, of course, is assuming that you're measuring the right things, which I'm not sure.
I was just going to ask you, like, so I think you have a unique position here since you taught in higher education in college.
Right.
And now you're teaching more in the high school range. So you have like the kind of students you wanted coming into college, like what the kind of level of preparedness, like what minimums you expected to see a college student arrive in your class at.
Yeah.
And now you know what, from the other side, what type of students they're sending off to college. And that is supposedly one of their stated goals.
Yeah.
Being ready for that kind of higher education jump.
Yes.
Do you feel like they're doing that? That those are interacting correctly or the way they should be, or are they not doing it the right way?
No, they're really not. When I was teaching in college, as you know, because I've talked about it before, the vast majority of students were not prepared for college. Mm. They did not have the writing skills. They did not have the reading skills. They did not have the study habits. But I got to say, the picture I'm developing, I think, is becoming very clear for what the real problem is, and it's the love of learning. If you love learning, those things can be fixable and more, and they can be fixed more rapidly than you think.
Yeah.
If you hate learning, then none of that matters.
This might be a problem because I don't know how you instill a love of learning, or do people either have it or do they not?
Well, because like when I went to college,
it's like I don't have a love of painting. I just don't paint. You can't teach me to love painting. I'm just not into it.
Yeah. Well, like when I went to college, I didn't pick a major with a career in mind or anything. I studied what I liked.
Yeah.
And I took the courses that I liked. Well, occasionally. I didn't like all of them, but
right.
I just liked being there.
Yeah.
But now when I ask people, you know, why did you pick this major or why are you doing this? And like, well, there's a lot of careers available in this.
Sure.
It just seems like the priority is results focused.
Right.
Rather than any actual appreciation for it.
Yes. Yes. So the attitude that way too many high school students, at least the ones I'm exposed to. Again, if you were talking to someone who was teaching at one of the top level schools in Colorado, they would probably have a different picture. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, I've been to a few schools, so it's not a completely isolated picture. And I talk with a lot of teachers in DPS and some other school districts, so it's not uncommon. But the biggest thing is that there are way too many students that hate school. They hate it. They are there because their parents make them and because they hear what people say and they know it's kind of true, that they won't have an easy time in life if they don't get their diploma, that they won't get a good job and won't make good money. And so they're doing it for, right, it's a external benefit. They're not doing it for an intrinsic benefit of learning. They might have a few moments here and there that they enjoy learning, but they don't notice that much. Mostly they notice their interaction with their friends and their social status, which are really important in high school. And are they going to get it done and just get it done? And so we're not instilling a love of learning in students. And then that just translates more into college. If they go to college right after high school, and I saw this a lot. Students who would go into a classroom, once they started to see that it was going to be kind of difficult, they're just angry.
Just check out also?
Or completely check out. Or just angry. Like, oh no, more of this shit. You know, FML. And that's what...
I'd be interested to see about how then they go on to different careers. Like if they're also like, now I have to go learn that also?
Something has to break them of that.
Yeah.
I know when I went to college, I loved it.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't really... allowed to go to college or wasn't encouraged to learn just for the sake of learning, even though in the church I did do that. I mean, you know, so when I say that Jehovah's Witnesses are kind of academic, I realized when I was saying it earlier that that was kind of through my own lens. I'm sure there are other Jehovah's Witnesses that don't have that experience, because ultimately to be a good Jehovah's Witness, you just have to follow the rules.
Yeah.
But there's a fair amount available, and I was kind of like that, so I was kind of an intellectual.
Yeah, so you had a love of learning, I'd say. Right or not?
It was something I was naturally good at, and I liked the show-off factor of it. When I was a kid, my nickname was the 21-year-old midget, because
but
when I was
also,
a really young kid, I was sounded very smart.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not sure I loved learning until I was in my early 20s.
Is enjoying being an intellectual different than that? Like, how old were you? You told us before in an episode when we talked about you that you... figured out how to use a drafting machine and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah, I loved computers, but that was mostly in my early 20s too.
Oh, okay.
I mean, a little bit in my late teens, I kind of screwed around with it, but mostly in my early 20s, things started to take off.
So there is hope for people who they can find this.
I enjoyed drafting courses in high school, and I took all of them. And so I translated that into later.
I wonder if there's a creativity component that helps with learning then, like where it allows you to be creative. And I think even just learning new things, there's creative ways to learn and creative things to learn, interesting things.
Absolutely.
So maybe how the hell do you get, knowing that these are the problems, like when you see what kind of students are coming into higher education from high schools, how do we make that more fun for them to be there? Then,
yeah.
I guess. It seems like that's
I'm
more
the telling
it's,
you, man.
With what we were talking about, becoming a better citizen and all that kind of stuff, it seems like that kind of stuff is almost easy to kind of program into what you're doing throughout the day in a subtle way where they'll just pick it up and learn it. And it should be more about just making the environment fun enough that they don't realize they hate being there.
You're kind of reading my mind, because I actually don't think giving students a good education is that hard, is that complicated of a task. I actually think that it's totally doable. And public schools, I don't think, are doing it. And I think public schools are making people hate learning, hate education. And I think there are multiple reasons for it. One of them has to do with one of the articles I sent you with, which is the math requirements. Yeah.
I'm not a math person.
The math requirements in high school make probably more than is responsible for probably more than half of the students who hate school.
I didn't even take math half of my senior year in high school. I took part of it, realized I had enough math credits that I could drop it, and I became a teacher's aide because it was so much more fun.
Sure.
Yeah, I barely took any math in high school. When I started college, I had to take courses before intro, remedial courses.
Sure.
And now, obviously,
you're a chemist.
I'm pretty good at math.
Yeah.
But
did math start clicking for you once you took those higher education ones? Because it just never clicked for me.
When I was in college, I was motivated, and I personally wanted to learn it.
Yeah, that makes a big difference too.
I didn't like it in high school. It was miserably boring.
Yeah.
But not having that, it wasn't that I wasn't able. Because I didn't have that math background in high school, going into college, I wasn't crippled.
Right. I just made it up for it.
I picked it up fine.
Yeah, because your attitude was, yes. Right. Yeah. Oh, my God. I tell people at my school this, that so we make everybody, this is actually going to get me wound up. We make everybody take higher level algebra. So students, for example, now, I think you guys are probably going to be surprised by this. Freshmen are coming in and we're teaching them algebraic functions.
Yeah, that seems kind of absurd.
Like, that's what's part of Algebra 2.
Yeah.
We're teaching freshmen functions.
That's, I can't remember when I started learning functions. Maybe it was 11th grade for me or 10th.
Yeah.
Two. I mean, I feel like.
And it was probably a course that you didn't have to take.
We had a pre-algebra class, then algebra, and then like algebra two, and then calculus if you wanted to. But I was like, hell no at that point. I was so bad at math. On a math test, the back of the test was one question, a big word problem, and you had the entire fucking side of that page to use and show your work.
Sure.
Instead, I drew an intricate picture of a basketball player dunking the ball. And I turned that in and the teacher just wrote WTF and gave me plus one because I did that on a 10-point question.
Oh, my God.
Well, when I was taking math in college, I was also taking other courses where it related. I could utilize the information made sense, but it was also it helped connect the dots.
Well, and by then you kind of had a better sense of what you were going to actually do with it, how it was going to be useful. So you were again motivated.
But as a freshman in high school,
No,
what the hell am I going to do with
it? When people say like, "What are you going to need to know an irrational number?" Or an imaginary number. I used to get in trouble because I'm a smart ass and the teacher would say, here's an imaginary number. And I say, well, then my answer is imaginary and it can't be wrong.
No, I mean, this is all why, this is one of the big reasons why students are infuriated with high school. I mean, there's another reason. The other reason is that we simply have them do too much. We have them do too many different things in high school. They're running from class to class with 4 minutes in between. Switching their thinking rapidly to just cover all the bases that we are setting up for them, making them wake up at the butt crack of dawn to get to school by 7:45 in the morning. Many of them haven't had breakfast yet. You can't learn that way.
You send them home with more work.
Right.
That was one interesting thing about my high school is we had no homework.
Yeah. There's a movement. And you know what? I've read a little bit about this and what I've read is that the absolutes on either side are not true. And that, I guess, makes sense. The idea that homework is categorically bad, that's not true. Yeah. But it loses its value after something like 45 minutes of homework a night or something like that. Yeah. Rapidly drops off in value. And, of course, you know, if you're – again, this feeds into the other problem I was just mentioning of having them trying to do too much.
Yeah.
If every class gives you just a half hour of homework – well, then you're going to have 4 hours of homework, right? We have 10 periods in our school. So, we're having them do way too much. The math requirements drive me crazy. They absolutely drive me crazy. And it's hard to express this, but I think you guys, hopefully I can. When I say that kids don't have a love of learning, what I mean is I think it is entirely possible that because of things like the math requirements, this makes students hate all kinds of learning.
It might.
Not just math. So when they come to my class, they're already annoyed that they have to be here. And so when they have run into something difficult in my class, they are annoyed because they're factoring in the other work that they have to do for math and the kinds of thinking they have to do for math. And now here's another challenge to my brain. Screw all you people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
I remember being mostly annoyed in math that I just couldn't quite do it for some reason. And like all other aspects of academia when I was in school, like the learning of all the other kind of classes really came natural to me and came very easy to me. And it's just like I just ran into a wall with math where I remember being frustrated that I couldn't understand why I couldn't understand do it.
Yeah. This article that I sent you guys talks exactly about that, that what happens is it has this effect of making the person feel like they're stupid.
Yeah.
And just kind of eats away at their self-esteem in lots of other ways and makes them kind of dread that feeling and shut down. And yeah, this describes a lot of the students that I have. And so when they get challenging work from me, even though I can give them an argument of why looking at the problem solving and looking at causal connections related to learning science has some actual value in how you look at the world and skills that will help you in life, that doesn't matter. It's like talking to a brick wall because they're already they're already full up of
the article
annoyance.
Had a good thing where it was saying that like we should let go of the idea that only through learning like algebra 2 or learning algebraic functions that that's the only way or the best way to teach logic and reason.
It's the stupidest thing
because
I've ever heard.
I can't really do math other than like, you know, your basic arithmetic I can do.
Yeah.
And I can understand how functions work. I understand it. I just can't do it.
Right.
But whenever I was in college, I took a logic class and I could do that. Yeah. I was really good at it and yeah. All of it made sense. And I felt like I took that about midway through college. After I took that class, everything else in college, I felt like I was almost entered on like a Game Genie cheat mode where I was like, huh,
yeah.
It just made like once I knew everything. How to think about
yep.
that and think in a logical and rational way.
Yeah.
It almost made other classes I was a little bit struggling with not fair.
Yep.
And I couldn't believe that I didn't learn this stuff earlier because it might not make sense for everyone who takes it. But for sure. me, it just all clicked in a way. I was like, God, I wish I had knew this stuff back in high school. I would have been even better than I was.
Imagine giving that experience to a high school student.
I wish they should get rid of the Algebra 2 and just teach a logic class.
Should we?
Yeah, we talked about this before.
It was weird because, logic does have equations in it, but it – you're not adding numbers and different things. You're adding words together in various ways. Yeah. That to me just made sense.
They're not actually that counterintuitive. Yeah. You know, one of the things that
it looks scarier than it is. Like if you open up a book like Tractatus or something like that, like a Wittgenstein book, you're like, holy the fuck, whenever you actually look at it. But whenever you actually read through it slowly, you can read through it, I think, if you just have some basic logic.
Yeah.
Should we explain the Game Genie reference to our younger listeners?
True.
Oh, right. What? The God mode?
Yeah.
That's true. Because there is no Game Genie anymore. It used to let you cheat at video games.
Yeah.
I actually wonder if that also changes the game a little bit. Nowadays, everyone has in their pocket a little computer that has all the knowledge in the universe in it that we know.
Pretty much.
I wonder if sometimes people are like, why do I need to learn this?
Yeah, no, I want to talk about that, but I don't want to leave the earlier point about logic. So I used to teach logic, and I got students who didn't perform well in logic and hated it. And I'm pretty sure that the reason why they did is because it reminded them of math.
Yeah.
And so they're already preconditioned to hate something. And therefore, when they see something like it, even though it's more intuitive than math, I think.
It is. I'll admit, I had a flashback.
A block from it.
When I saw some parentheses in logic, I was like, what's happening?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been hurt before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's much easier than, than mathematics.
Yeah. So this is one of the things that really makes my job very difficult and also is very frustrating because it's deeply embedded in judging the school's performance and judging the student's performance.
You mean math teachers don't want to say that math isn't valuable?
Oh, no, I get into arguments with them about this. I get into arguments with other science teachers. It's kind of almost heresy for a science teacher to say that the way we're teaching too much math.
Too bad for them.
They'll look at me like, what are you talking about? You're a science teacher. I thought we need students to graduate with calculus so that they'll be ready for science career. You're supposed to be encouraging this.
STEM jobs.
Yeah, it's just no. And they don't get it. Usually when I explain it, the argument to them, they don't have a great response. Because when I tell them, look, well, we can cut through all the other stuff about careers because you and I both know that the vast majority of students are not going to become science majors. And so making everybody go through a hoop that only 1% actually needs is unethical.
Yeah.
That's not ethical to have that. So the reason that we all use is that learning math sharpens students' critical thinking skills. And the problem is that's ill-phrased. You can't actually say that as the reason. What you have to actually show is not that it teaches critical thinking skills, but that it teaches critical thinking skills better than other things that teach critical thinking.
Yeah.
And I would say, and when you can come up with the evidence for that, get back to me. Other than that, I'm really done talking to you.
It seems unlikely, too.
There isn't any evidence for that, by the way. I've looked into it, then there's not. There's none of that.
It seems counterintuitive to me that something like calculus would help you with critical thinking skills. I mean, you're taking abstract concepts. Well, not even really abstract concepts. There's no way to relate it to anything applicable
right.
in your life.
My thing was I wished that I would have learned how to do logic and reasoning because it would have helped me do math better. I'm convinced of that because...
Yeah, the other way around.
There are things that I... Sure. Like as a layperson, when I study certain things in physics, like with with cosmology, that makes so much more sense to me now. And I actually...
Sure.
I remember that I took an astronomy class after... For fun, it was one of my electives. I took that after I took my logic class. All the functions and everything suddenly made sense to me. It's like I could read that language. And I had the skills to think critically and to reason more than anything. And if you can just do that, you can kind of reason through understanding what the math is trying to tell you to do, even if you have trouble doing the actual calculations.
Sure.
I could suddenly now understand all of that stuff in a way that I just couldn't before. I felt like in high school, they were trying to teach me to run before they taught me how to walk in a way.
Sure.
It was just the math.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, like in like advanced calculus, I wanted to understand it because it helped me understand quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
So I had
this is in college.
Yeah, so I had something in mind that I was trying to understand. Whereas if you were to just throw that at me in high school, I have no.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. When I was in high school, I very distinctly remember my math classes because you know I was pretty good at math. But I didn't do very well in them, and I didn't take the elective higher level math classes that, you know, some of the counselors thought I should be taking. And the reason why it annoyed me, and later in life I actually kind of lost some of my math skills, I ended up trying to take college algebra, which college algebra initially is just functions.
Yep.
And I had to drop out of it because I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not getting this. And it did make me feel kind of dumb. And this was when I was in my late 30s.
Yeah.
So I did things to work around the math requirements. Philosophy programs, some of them require a certain level of math, and most of them don't. So part of probably one of the reasons why I majored in philosophy was the lower math requirements. Yeah. But when I was in high school... And I was good at it, and I was on that edge, and I wasn't convinced to really embrace doing math, embrace getting good at it. My reasoning was, I liked computers at the time, and I thought, well, why am I doing this? A computer would be way better at this than me, and that's why they're called computers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is stupid for me to learn. And I never got past that. I still feel that whenever I'm doing math problems. I still feel like this is stupid for me to do. Why would I do this? As a matter of fact, this is changing the way I teach science, by the way. So science, you know, obviously some of the science classes involve students doing math problems and things like that. What I've decided that I'm going to do is, and I've started doing it, is I'm not teaching them to do the math by hand with calculators. I'm teaching them how to use a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Because that's how adults do math.
As a professional scientist, whenever I have to do any kind of new calculation... Uh-huh. I create a model in a spreadsheet.
Right.
So I can just put in the data.
And duh.
Duh. Right. I have to do it one time. And
right.
Then
so you have to understand some of the concepts.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to understand in most applications in life. I don't think you need anything beyond Algebra 1.
No.
And even it probably would be rare that you need even algebra. To understand some of the science concepts, you need some basic algebra. But I would guess that most of the time, even in your job, the spreadsheets, the formulas that are involved are kind of basic math functions.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, it's more important for them to know if they're not getting the right answer, I guess.
Yeah.
Just
know how to check their work.
Right.
Not so much as like show all of your work.
Right.
As long as you get the right answer, do you know how you got a right answer?
Right. A little bit about how to expect it.
I have a mass spectrometer at my job, and I can...
Right.
I can
That's kind of cool that you can say that, by the way.
I can go through all the equations of how that instrument works, but when I go to work, I press the button.
Yeah.
And I get the result.
Dur.
So it's...
And you're a scientist.
Yeah. And I like knowing how that all works.
Right.
But there's absolutely no reason for me to go through that math.
Right.
Ever again.
Right.
I understood it. It's interesting to me. But I don't use it.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah. Like I said, I understand how a car works. I don't know how to build one.
Right.
If I were designing a spectrometer, I would be more inclined to want to do that. But
sure,
I'm not. I just press the button.
I mean, look, and the last 5 minutes, we've talked about using some math skills. I'm not saying math shouldn't be taught. up to algebra one, I think that, you know, there is some value in understanding the basics of math, understanding how to think quantitatively. I just, and it's what really annoys students, these problems that just are completely puzzling, and they know I will never need that in my life. And I'm just at the beginning. This is the first day of class. I got a whole semester of this and then another semester. Hell no.
Yeah.
Now they're just angry at the whole system. And so it's really discouraging that we're not doing a good job of creating an environment that students can love learning, can engage in a little bit more play in learning, and not be running around frantic all the time, and that they're not buying this idea that they need the math. They're not stupid. Yeah. They can see that they don't need it. They can see that it doesn't do what people say it's going to do. And it has this negative effect. So, you know, in effect, they look at the teachers and the school as lying to them because they're not buying the idea that they need the math and that it's really helping them. And so it makes them more skeptical of you as a teacher and something else because they're ready for you to lie to them more. It's all these adults are just lying to me to get me do what they want to do. And they're naturally rebellious anyways.
And it also, even if you like learning like I did, some things are just not interesting topics to you.
Yeah.
I mean, I never took a class on baking or anything like that.
Sure.
It's just not where my interests lie.
Sure.
I never took a shop class and stuff. I think that kind of stuff is sort of interesting. I'm just too lazy to actually want to sit down and whittle some wood. That's just what it comes down to. I mean, like this is not – so at a certain point, math just wasn't very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, other than – like I think it's neat. The same way I think it's really neat how – you know, people make airplanes. Like that show, How It's Made is neat. I just don't want to go do any of those things.
I'll tell you what, I have more interest in learning how to do like puzzles than doing math. I do think math can be kind of fun to treat it like a puzzle. But if you had in front of me a bunch of different kinds of puzzles and I could get good at one of them, I wouldn't choose math. I would choose some other kind of puzzle solving for just enjoyment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would get the same kind of critical thinking skills and persistence and all the stuff that they preach that is math, that math teaches you.
We should just teach kids how to play Sudoku. It would be more fun. They would hate everything.
Sure. You know, there is a little bit of hope. Our school is moving toward an integrated math model. Instead of having kids go through the standard, you know, pre-algebra, algebra, geometry, whatever, you know, the old progression was, they're having them do integrated math one, integrated math two. And in integrated math, they're bringing in some other things that are possibly really helpful, like some statistics, some general puzzle solving. So, you know, one of the problems that was up on the board recently was how students could figure out how many connections there were in a series of roads. And so how one route had a certain number of intersections compared to another route in order to evaluate it. And I was looking at that problem, and I was thinking, this is actually not what I would call math. This is just problem solving.
Right.
And the courses have some of that now, and I don't know how strongly that's going to take hold, or I'm afraid that it does still involve some higher algebra built into the integrated math. So I think that is frustrating still. But I think it's a step in the right direction. There's a lot of tension about this stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff that we're talking about is known. These are known problems in education. So I think there are people who advocate for it. But the last thing I wanted to talk about was the influence of corporations.
Yeah.
This article that I sent about the excessive math requirements, one of the things it talks about is, well, hey, the math textbook that we're using is by one of the big publishers, Pearson.
Yeah.
Pearson, by the way, they are a monster. It is unbelievable how big they are and how many fingers they have in education. I was recently looking into, for example, how a student could avoid being in high school if they really hated it. Because, you know, I'll think outside the box. You know, it would be weird for a teacher to say to you, yeah, if you don't like high school, then don't go. But every once in a while, teachers do say that because we get tired of dealing with students who really hate being there and then destroy the environment.
Right.
So I wanted to know, okay, what actual options are there if someone really hates the high school model but wants to get a diploma? Well, there's the GED. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking into the GED. Yeah, the GED is a test nationwide. You know the company that runs that? Is Pearson.
I did not know that.
Yes. So it's like you can't get away from them.
Yeah.
They run. They have, it's like that scene in The Matrix. They hold all the keys. They have all the doors. Right? Yeah. So when you start thinking outside the box and thinking about maybe how to fix the math requirements or how to fix the schedule or how to fix some of the standardized testing, you run into this problem of there being powerful corporations.
Yeah.
And people in administrations that are beholden to them, and how they are, these corporations have lobbyists and know politicians and all that's the special interest stuff. And that is pretty apparent when you're an educator. You'll go to many a professional development sessions that you will during and after think, what the fuck was that? That was nothing. And it was just some presentation that was sponsored by a company.
Man, once you introduce that kind of human tribalism element to it, it just fucks up so much stuff.
It does.
I honestly feel like I've been trying to think of what I feel like is some of the biggest problems that face humanity. I really feel like tribalism is probably it.
Definitely.
Well, I think the way
us against them,
it poisons so much stuff. Yeah, and it sets up this kind of, well, we're right and you're wrong.
You experience that as a teacher with the administration, that it can easily turn into an us against them, that they are in a club that you're not, and you're in a club that they're not, and you know, because the teachers' union and the way teachers talk, and then it becomes adversarial, and it's a shame.
And it becomes our way versus your way that you want to do.
Sure,
and this is the way we do it.
Yeah,
and we can't. And you say, "Well, why can't we do it a different way?" Because that's not the way we do it.
That's right.
Well, I always get nervous whenever corporations get involved in a service that's intended for the public good.
Yeah,
it's vested interest. It just seems logical to me that you would be extremely weary of that.
Yeah,
but there's, I think, in our culture, there's a resistance to. Well, especially like on the far right. It's
strong public institutions. Yes.
Do you feel like that sort of corporate interest also, I mean, it must, but like, how did you, do you feel like you experienced any of that in your private school education? Like looking back, can you?
No, not really. So my private school was owned, it wasn't owned by a large company. It was owned by the principal of the school.
And was it not a religious school?
It was owned by the principal of the school.
Yeah.
Huh.
Now I wish Brittany would have been here for this episode, because I think she went to a religious private school.
Yeah, this wasn't one of these corporations that have private institutions. This was a woman who was unhappy with the current atmosphere in education, so she made her own school.
Hmm.
And she owned it. She eventually sold it, but not while I was there.
Hmm.
But it was a singular entity. Hmm. So there was very little. We didn't have standardized testing. There wasn't really any of that. It was fully funded by the parents who paid for the school.
Chalmers never even saw a Scantron until he got to college. He's like, "The hell's this?"
I didn't see a Scantron in.
I'll tell you what. School. I don't think that standardized testing is categorically bad. I think that standardized testing can be a good way of measuring something. And I think that if it's done right, it can be a measurement of general cognitive skills. And I actually think the PSAT is a decent test.
Mm-hmm.
But when you throw that in with all the other aggravations of education and all the other standardized tests, and we're conditioning kids to hate education.
What if we tried to use a standardized test? Let's say that we're trying to get this to be we're trying to help instill a joy of learning. So instead, the standardized test you're giving people is to see what areas do they seem to be performing well in, and maybe that would show that they enjoy that more. What areas are they not performing well in, and then you can kind of try and use it as a diagnostic tool to be like, do they just not like it? Are they just not interested in that period?
Why couldn't you use grades?
I think grades, I guess that's the same thing.
Well, I'll tell you the way that my school ran in terms of schedules. So every quarter, semester, I don't remember what they do in high school, quarters probably.
Well, there's summer off, so we have semesters.
I don't remember. But anyway, yeah, maybe it was semesters. So every semester, you would pick your six classes, but there were only about 3 to 4 students per class or per teacher.
Wow.
Really?
So I didn't have a schedule. I was given my packet for each course, my syllabus.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to school, I went to whichever classes I want in any order I wanted, for as long as I wanted.
Hmm.
And the goal was just to get your stuff done before the end, but we didn't have, I mean, I could choose to do homework,
right?
But as long as the teachers felt I was
It's mastery, a mastery model. Yeah. And that sounds like a good model.
Yeah, that sounds crazy to me, considering how I went.
It's not seat time.
Yeah.
I graduated almost a year early.
Yeah.
Without doing homework.
Yeah.
But I would, I would always pick my favorite class, and I would go to that one for 6 hours a day and just really enjoy it. But if I got bored of it, I would go to one of the other classes and get some stuff done there. And it was just... I don't know. I liked it.
That sounds cool.
That's insane to me. Given how I went through school, I can't even imagine.
God, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I think that there are a lot of great things that could be done. And there are, I sometimes call it the math industrial complex. That's a big stumbling block. And I think it's hard to overstate how that negatively affects high school. I mean, there's actually a fair amount out there that says that students start to hate school when they start getting into high school. It's not before.
I'd say that's about the time that I began to get annoyed with that.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah.
Also, I hated elementary school.
Yeah, I mean, also, like I said, that time period of your life, you know, when you're going through puberty and that kind of stuff, too. Yeah. I mean, it just becomes a bit of a chore to get up earlier and that kind of stuff. But
I had kind of the opposite experience because I went to private school because I was doing very poorly in elementary and middle school. I absolutely hated it.
Right.
I hated going to school. It wasn't until I got to high school that I actually started to like school.
Yeah. Huh.
Man, I don't know how you start to bring about change into these things.
Sadly, I don't think you can.
Me neither.
I know that sounds awful.
I know that sounds. I feel very pessimistic as I'm just trying to look at it in a very realistic way.
Yeah.
We're not pessimists. We're just realists. Yeah, I mean, look at the system.
Yeah, I think the forces are too great, and there would be too much.
The train has kind of left the station on this. I mean,
yeah. As a teacher, the most I can do is I can try my best to give students a love of learning, try my best to have them enjoy just using their mind, and I don't know if I'm successful, and probably. By the time you would be able to see some signs of my success, they would be long after they got out of high school, maybe even.
Yeah, yeah. Because a lot of times you look back on stuff, you're like, that was a good class.
Exactly.
A good teacher. But
so I don't know that there's a good way to measure this kind of thing until long after. And, you know, even then you're not sure if that's the school is the cause of your joy of learning. So I think it's very difficult to figure out if a teacher is doing a good job or a school is doing a good job. Maybe it's the kind of thing that you only know if you see it. It's not really easily measurable. It's possible. Yeah.
For those wondering how we're doing as a society right now with creating citizens, you can watch Donald Trump's State of the Union as pretty soon.
I don't think that reflects our society.
I'm just being a cynical bastard.
Yeah, I think people think that because of that, our society is not doing well, and I'm not sure. I think that that's just...
There's a lot of factors that go into that.
The presidency, I don't think, is doing well. I'm not sure our society is not functioning.
I feel like society is doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Elon Musk is launching cars into space because it's fun.
Yeah, I've never been very fatalistic about, like, the U.S. and all that. Like, I think that overall... Most of the world really has made a natural upward progress.
Have you ever read that book? Who wrote it? Like Steven Pinker, The Better Angels of Our Demons, where he's talking about, like, you know, generally speaking, things are getting better.
Yeah.
Like where people want to dwell on how bad things are. And it's not to say that bad things aren't still happening and there's not still work to be done. It's just if you look at the long arc of it, it's getting better.
Yeah.
Like objectively better.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that maybe we should do another episode on education in the future. And I'd like to hear from some people I know that maybe know a little bit more about education, public education, because they've been in it longer. So I might see if I can invite a guest or two.
I would love to have maybe a retired principal who can kind of speak from the more administrative side of it without getting in trouble.
I know a retired principal.
I wonder if that would be an interesting thing where they can kind of – you can – talk about it like how you see it as a teacher.
Yeah.
They can kind of talk about it, about the things, good or bad, just the realities of what they need to do to make the school a school.
Yeah.
Get like an ex-Pearson CEO.
Good luck.
I actually know some of my local politicians, and one of them is a former educator. So that's big on their issue.
That would be really interesting, too.
It's a big issue. And, you know, even if we couldn't get them on the show, it'd be neat to just kind of talk to them about some of this stuff. And I've talked to her a few times about education.
You know, even if you couldn't, here's some inside baseball for people listening here. for how our show works. Even if you can just talk to that person, you can just record a Skype call with just you and that person and just splice it into an episode.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Just like a 15-minute conversation.
Yeah, just interview them. I don't know cool if they would interview. Do it, but
it
maybe.
It would be cool if we could find somebody.
Yeah, so this topic has some legs. We're going to revisit this again. For today, I think, as usual, I enjoy having these conversations with you guys.
It was good.
Thinking about what is possible, even though sometimes that can be a little annoying too. But something about the education system in this nation worked for us, at least.
Yeah.
Wasn't, I think, the best it could be. And I don't think it is serving those who are really in need. That's one of the things that the three of us have in common is we weren't super poor.
Yeah.
We are all white.
Yeah.
We had opportunities and we developed a love of learning kind of on our own. So, you know, I don't know that the system serves those that are minorities or don't get the start that we have. And that's, I think, a bigger issue, too. So something to talk about later. It's great to see you guys.
It's good. I enjoyed this. So, hey, everyone out there listening, think responsibly because it's fun. Because it's fun.
Self-control has just expired.